Welcome back to the Disciple Makers podcast. Before we jump into the episode, I wanted to let you know that this will be our second to last episode for this season of the podcast. When we started the podcast back in April, we weren't sure how long it would go for, and as the fall semester begins, all of our staff, including Sarah and I, are a lot more busy. So we'll have this episode today, and then one more next week before taking a break for a while. We're thinking we'll likely be recording another season of the podcast every summer, but we may drop some surprise episodes here and there throughout the year. So you can follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen and stay tuned to social media to make sure you catch any future episodes. Today, we are joined by Zach Guggenheim to talk about the connection between our souls and our bodies. Often, Christians can tend to want to solve every problem or trial with a spiritual answer. But through our conversation, Zach helped us to see how the Bible actually calls us to view ourselves and others more holistically, as both body and soul working together. This can really help us as we seek to care well for others, and gives us some very practical implications for how we can steward our bodies to become more effective in our ministry. Towards the end of the episode, we also talked about some particular implications about this topic related to the new semester and the continuing pandemic. So join us as we discuss these things and more with Zach on the Disciple Makers podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Caleb Olszewski, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Evans.
Hi, guys.
Today, we are joined by Zach Guggenheim. Zach works on campus with us in the Susquehanna Valley, and he has been on staff for a number of years. And today he's here to talk about this topic of our bodies. But welcome to the podcast, Zach. It's great to have you.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So today, like I said, we're talking about our bodies. And often in our Christian walks, we talk a lot about the spiritual aspects and spiritual disciplines and all these things. But today we're going to kind of touch on is where is the intersection between our souls or our spiritual kind of aspects of our walk with the Lord, but also we have physical bodies, and how does our walk with the Lord impact how we should treat our bodies, what we should do with them, all those sorts of things. And so I'd love to just start by asking you, Zach, how'd you get interested in this topic specifically, and what has caused you to think a lot about it to where you'd want to come and talk about it with us today?
Yeah, I think at first there was just personal experience, which I'll share a little bit more in the podcast as we get further. But probably the biggest influence is I am currently pursuing a Master's of Arts in Biblical Counseling at Westminster Theological Seminary. And I took a class called Counseling and Physiology. And one of the things that Dr. Mike Emlett referred to often was the reality that we are embodied souls. And so we are not just aimless souls that are going around, and we're not just physical bodies without any spiritual component, but they're actually intertwined, and God created us that way. That's how he created us. And so we have to understand that they are intertwined as we think about ministry, as we think about life, as we go about life. And I think what really struck me is, you know, I've done campus ministry for 12 years now. I was saved in college. So 15 years in a college context, most college students don't necessarily have tons of physical ailments. Some of them do. And so I don't want to say that all don't. But my first case study in the class was, how would you counsel a 55-year-old stroke victim? And I wrote my paper, and one of my examples or one of the methods was, oh, have him journal for an hour as he starts to work on his relationship with God. And my professor was like, you think a stroke victim is going to be able to journal for an hour? Like, why don't we start at 5 minutes? I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And so it just, yeah. I realized just, wow, the body affects how we are able to pursue Christ. And it's not that we can't pursue him, but that the state of our physical body can create issues. And so I think there's many things I think we often see as black and white. So mental health, addiction, medication, overemphasis on the spiritual over physical. We have to understand that there's actually a lot of shades of gray as we think about this relationship between our souls and our bodies.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And how we can just assume, oh, well, they should do this because this is what I would do. But people have different experiences than us or different realities than us. So that's such an interesting example. As you think about this, Zach, how do you think about the physical body in light of the scriptures?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sarah. So I think we have to remember first that Jesus was physical, right? Like he comes as a person. He is fully God, but he is fully man. And so that's a core piece of biblical theology. And so even think how Jesus sums up the law, right? Love the Lord God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength. Like I would imagine that part of that's physical strength. Jesus is called Emmanuel, which means God with us. Jesus returns in a resurrected body, and we are promised resurrected bodies. So I think it's Luke 24 verses 41 through 43, just to prove the point that he is a physical being once again, and he's not some ghost, right? He eats a fish in front of the disciples. John 20 verses 24 through 29, Thomas says, I need to touch him. My hand needs to go into his hands. And Jesus invites him to. So these are all physical things about Jesus himself. And not just Jesus pre-resurrection, but Jesus post-resurrection. And then Paul even says in 1 Timothy 4:8 that physical training is of some value. So even Paul, who I think we would argue is a spiritual giant, would say, actually, the bodily training is of some value. Hmm. Colossians, I would actually argue Colossians is one of the greatest works in terms of building a theology on the body. Colossians helps us see the danger of Gnosticism and asceticism, which in part it kind of entails the rejection of the physical to be spiritually enlightened. And what you see throughout Colossians is Paul helps reveal the very real theology that Jesus Christ is the preeminent risen Lord who created all things. He holds all things together and is reconciling all things to himself. And that's all in Colossians 1, verses 15 through 23. And he's speaking of both spiritual and material things. So he's bringing all these things together in himself. And so it alludes to this reality that God created us, male and female, in his image. So as image bearers, we were made as physical beings with a spiritual soul. That is true. There's this reality. We are embodied souls, but we're also fallen. And so our bodies, they were created, but because of the fall, you know, there are weaknesses to them. They're going to die, but also they're going to be redeemed and restored, just like our souls. And so I think that's where we see that all throughout the scriptures.
Yeah, that's super helpful, Zach, just to give us a good grounding in it. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more. You mentioned, I think it was Gnosticism and asceticism or something like that. I'm just unfamiliar with those ideologies. So I was wondering if you could just expand on what those are and help us understand how Colossians is relating to those ideologies.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So Colossians 2, verses 20 through 23 says this: if you died with Christ to the elements of this world, why do you live as if you still belong to the world? And you would expect, I'm just going to pause there. That's verse 20. You would expect him at that point to be like, don't do X, Y, or Z. But verse 21, he goes on and he says this: why do you submit to regulations? Don't handle, don't taste, don't touch. All these regulations refer to what is destined to perish by being used up. They are human commands and doctrines. In other words, what he's saying is like, you guys are listening to these rules of things you need to stay away from in order to be enlightened. So if I don't taste, if I don't touch, if I don't handle these specific physical things, I will be spiritually enlightened. But then you get to verse 23, although these have a reputation for wisdom by promoting self-made religion, false humility, and severe treatment of the body, they are not of any value in curbing self-indulgence. And so in the very thing they're trying to do, which is to curb physical self-indulgence, they're actually failing. And so what you see is the answer is then to seek the things above. But I think Gnosticism and aestheticism, it's relying heavily on kind of self-denial and saying true spirituality is removing oneself from the world and removing oneself from the physical. And I think actually what the text would say is that's actually not what Christ offers.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe an example, somebody who's, you know, an aestheticism or Gnosticism, we can think about even examples from history. If people have ever heard of people that would like beat themselves, like the people that would flog themselves or people that would never allow themselves to eat like any like sugar or honey, or even in the Bible, there's something called a Nazarene, which is somebody who lives like very strictly, but only for a period of time. But we're talking about someone who's like hyper, hyper creating all these rules and following them and really denying any form of pleasure, any form of luxury. And what Colossians is saying is, okay, well, that might make you feel sort of, I don't know, holier than somebody else, but not actually, because it's not actually stopping you from sinning. Is that what you're saying, Zach?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And I think like pretending that we don't have a physical body is, or really, really trying to, I don't know, make our bodies something they aren't is, yeah, it's not going to work.
Right. It's extreme legalism.
Yeah. Yeah. And so even kind of related to that extreme legalism, something that you mentioned even earlier is that there's a risk in some of these extreme legal rules of almost over-spiritualizing our walk with the Lord. When I first think of that, I'm like, well, how could, you know, spiritual things are good things. How could an over-spiritualizing be bad? But what do you mean by that? And what are some of the dangers of over-spiritualizing our walk with the Lord?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sarah. I don't think most of us would struggle with the like beating ourselves, right? Like that's probably not what we're talking about when we're talking about like the over-spiritualizing. I think for us, especially maybe in modern day American evangelicalism, I think it's easy to answer every physical problem with a spiritual answer. Hmm. So like a physical problem always is going to expose sin. And I think there's some truth to that, right? Like God uses different trials to expose things in our lives. He uses different trials to produce steadfastness. You know, James 1, count it all joy, my brothers, when you encounter trials of various kinds, for they produce steadfastness. That's really true. But I think we have to understand that that can be insufficient in a total care for a person. Because Jesus does care not just about the spiritual, but the physical. Now I want to nuance that. I'm not saying scripture is insufficient because scripture speaks to our physical bodies. We as sinners are prone to highlight spiritual solutions at the expense of the physical. So a good example, and some of you listening know Faith Buck, formerly Faith Thomas. I was talking with her about this in the realm of eating disorders. And so people who wrestle with anorexia, she was telling me that we often think they need spiritual help. And that's true. They need spiritual help with their hearts, but they also need someone to tell them to eat something because they don't necessarily have the energy to go and pursue the Lord because they're so malnourished. Mm. Another example, people who are addicted to pornography or to drugs, they need not only to address the sinful desire, but we also have to understand that the more you're in an addiction, the chemistry of our brains are rewired. And so like pornography addicts, there's a great program called Living Free. And one of the things that they try to help you understand is that as you get addicted to pornography, what you're doing is you're releasing more of the hormone of serotonin, which produces happiness and joy and pleasure. But what's happening to your brain is you are tricking your brain, and therefore your brain is dulled to the pleasure senses. And so you just crave more of it. And so there is this actual physical problem that happens to an addict. The same is true with cocaine addicts. It's dopamine. Dopamine is the chemical that's released. And again, it gets dulled and the synapses get dulled. And so you have to think about that reality, that it's not just a spiritual problem, it's a physical problem. And if we quickly address the heart, rather than lamenting maybe the losses of things, maybe it's the struggles with addiction. Maybe it's just the loss of being able to do the things that you used to do, like with the stroke victim earlier that I was talking about, or even if you have chronic pain, we can really harm people if we move too quickly to address the heart. So I think there's a lot there. Even one other thing that I would encourage us to think through is that I think we have this false narrative that we create that if we're strong, we don't need to take medication. We don't need to take anything to increase our spiritual mood. Real Christians don't take meds. So when in reality, Christians are people of faith, and you can take meds or vitamin supplements by faith, just like you cannot take them by faith. And you can take meds out of fear and not take meds out of fear. So I feel like that's a long list of ways that we can over-spiritualize. And I think we need to be careful, right? We need to be careful. We need to be nuanced as we talk with people.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Zach. And I think it's super important for us to realize, for both ourselves and as we minister to others, consider the whole person. So both a spiritual aspect of that and a physical body aspect of that. It's reminding me of James chapter 2. He's talking about things in terms of faith and works, but I think there's similar application for us. In verse 14, he starts by saying, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." And so you see this scriptural example. He's kind of basically saying, you just saying to someone like, "Go and be warmed and filled," like that does not make them warm or filled. They need something with which to actually warm and fill them. So Zach, as we consider how to kind of care for the whole person, both in ourselves and for others, what does it look like to start to consider how are some of these spiritual and bodily things connected, and how can they kind of impact and affect one another?
Yeah, I think the big picture, if God created us as embodied souls, then it stands to reason that they can work together to help us move closer to Christ, and conversely, they can hinder one another. So even, I think going back to even James, earlier in James 1, it says true religion is this, to attend to orphans and widows in their need and to be unstained from the world. So like it's a both and. And it's, I think, similar to what you're bringing out in James 2. But I think that really affects our personal lives. So I think a good example right off the bat is eating healthy can help our sleep. And if you're able to sleep well, it improves your mood, which will enable us to have greater intimacy with God and better care for others. Now, that's not to say that you need to sleep well and that you have to have a good diet to be able to relate to the Lord. That is not what I'm saying. But like how many of us, if we get up in the morning after a poor night's sleep, actually have a great devotional time with the Lord? Like how much easier is it instead to ignore that for more sleep, or just a lazily kind of put together devotion, which you don't get anything from? And then how much easier is it to be short or impatient with other people? Now, God is exposing those things in your heart when you're impatient and you're short with people, but also, if you have better sleep, if you eat healthier, you'll probably have a longer fuse with people too. you'll probably have a greater intimacy with God. So I think that's just a very easy daily thing. Is I think if we actually, if we just eat healthier, I would wonder how much better our times with God would be, and how much more effective our relationships with people would be. Another, this is just a personal example from my life. I started noticing over the past few winters that my mood in the winter is terrible. Like, I'm just consistently more depressed in the winter because there's less sunlight. It's cold. You know, it just feels, especially after Christmas, there's something about after Christmas where you just feel like, oh,
it's just dark and everything's frozen.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel that for sure.
Yeah. I have to get outside and it's 10 below and I have to start my car. And yeah, it just feels very hopeless. I started taking vitamin D supplements because vitamin D, it helps, again, helps release serotonin, which boosts mood and helps you be calm. This past winter was probably my easiest fight against depression. And part of it was, now maybe it was the placebo effect, I don't know. But I started taking vitamin D and I actually was starting to feel a lot more hopeful. It was easier to wake up in the morning. And so I think by faith, I was like, okay, if I don't take vitamin D, like, I don't think I'm dishonoring God, but by faith, I can use that vitamin to boost my mood, to help me be in a better position to worship the Lord. So I think that's one example from my life. Another one is exercise helps improve blood flow and memory. It stimulates chemical changes in the brain that enhance learning, mood, and thinking. So think about this. If exercise helps your memory, I would think that our ability to remember God's word would be helpful for our worship of God. Like, even for evangelism, I cannot tell you how loved people feel when you remember their name. So if exercise helps memory and it's a natural way to boost your memory, like, your good exercise routine can actually enhance your ability to evangelize and disciple.
That's so cool. And it's so interesting. And how I like what you're saying. You know, our hope isn't necessarily in these things alone, but if God has made these things, you can use them. You know, you don't have to, but like, you can use them. And I think that that's really helpful. And it really helps to have a spiritual answer and a physical answer and not just, oh, Zach, well, when you're sad in the winter, like, you should just pray more. Like, pray. I'm not at all saying prayer is a bad thing. Prayer is always a good thing. But sometimes if there's a real lack in your physical body, that's still going to be a struggle and still going to be hard. And so if this thing can help, like, praise God, God made it. So that's great. As we're talking about this, why do you think it's important to be aware of our own physical body issues and those of people around us? You know, why, as we're all getting back to campus, well, some people are, you know, getting back with the students are getting back with each other. And how does adding this sort of category of thinking about physical body issues add significance?
Yeah, I think for two reasons. One, it helps us understand that our problem isn't solely a worship problem, but also a brokenness problem. So, like, everything points to what we worship, but we also have to deal with the reality that we live in a fallen world or a broken world. And so to be aware of that is just very helpful. Like, everyone is living in the reality of a broken world. Second, it allows us to have more grace for ourselves and for others. And it helps us to redefine what faithfulness could be for a person. So, like, I mentioned the stroke victim in my case study. So if they have a stroke, you probably won't have the capacity to have an hour-long devotional every day that maybe a healthy person would. So instead, you celebrate when they, by faith, seek to spend 5 minutes in the Word, and they can actually retain something. Like, that's a praiseworthy thing, because by faith, they got in the Word. I think there's another case study I had to do with someone who is suffering from OCD. And we joke about OCD, and it's like, oh, this person has OCD, but it's a serious thing that people can grapple with. It's actually, it's caused by problems in your orbitofrontal cortex or your anterior cingulate cortex, which is, it's the front of your brain. There's other parts of the brain too that can be affected. But basically what OCD becomes, it's this fear, and often an irrational fear, of being contaminated by something. And it can be triggered by spiritual things. But I think with that example, what you can do to care for someone is you can really help empathize with the fear of being contaminated. So like in the case study, the person was fearful of going in the shower. And so rather than being like, well, that's dumb, just take the darn shower where you can get clean, you actually say, hey, let's actually bring a physical element to help you cope with this. While also, let's look at what the scriptures say about being cleansed. Like, how does Jesus actually cleanse you from the worst contamination? So I think it's Zechariah where the high priest sees himself covered in dung, and then, but Jesus makes him clean. And so let's talk about the reality that Jesus cleanses you, but also let's have you practice practical cleansing that will help encourage you as you keep going in this. There's a person I counseled in this class that was going through chronic pain. And for her, and as we were talking, it was helping her see where she would see strong people around her, and I need to do what they can do. It was helping her see that weakness was an opportunity to see God's power at work. So 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. But also helping her find a healthy diet to provide long-term health and pain management for better quality of life. And so it was, I think it's understanding that each person is going through hard things. And so thinking through, okay, there are practical things that they can do, and there are deep-seated heart issues that need to be uncovered. Let's not ignore one and elevate the other. Let's see, okay, holistically, how do we care for one another? How do we care for ourselves? Great, a really good example from my life. We had a house fire 4 years ago, and I was struggling from mild levels of PTSD. And I would see 1 Peter 5, cast your anxieties on the Lord. I'd be like, I'm casting my anxieties, and I could not settle down to pray. And so I went to counseling, and I thought my pastor was going to tell me like 10 different Bible verses. And his first counsel to me was buy a punching bag. And at first I was like, what are you talking about? Why do I need a punching bag? And his explanation was, you are having a hard time praying because adrenaline is coursing through your veins. So of course you are having a hard time to pray because your body is just all jazzed up from that. So go buy a punching bag, get the adrenaline out, and then pray. It's a practical way to cast your anxieties on the Lord. I was like, oh, I never bought the punching bag. I just started running, but it's the same thing. But like it's understanding that there are rhythms physically and spiritually that can work in tandem rather than separate.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Zach. And I wonder, I know we are not going to be professionally trained counselors after this, and we should not expect to be, but as we do encounter other people, friends, family members, folks we're trying to engage with on campus, what are some questions or some things we can be thinking about as we start to engage with others and start to try to consider, yeah, the whole person, not just the spiritual, but the physical as well?
Yeah, there's a great book I would recommend called Crosstalk by Mike Emlett. He was actually my professor for the class that I took. And he does a great job of breaking down people in three categories: saint, sinner, and sufferer. And I think if they're not a Christian, I think you can replace saint for image bearer. And I think we often put people into either the saint or sinner category. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, maybe it's just me, I do that based on who is convenient and inconvenient for my life at the present moment. And that's not loving your neighbor. That's partiality. Mm. And so I'd argue we probably need to do a better job of putting people in the sufferer category more often than not. I think if you look at the Psalms, we see honest lament over hardship, over real hardship. I think Clint did an episode a while back on lament. I think lament actually probably pairs very well, particularly for young people who suffer, because it's not expected for a young person's body to break down, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So I think as we think about body issues, I think, how do I see the whole person? How do I see a person as a saint? How do I see a person as a sinner? How do I see a people? How do I see people as sufferers? I think you even see this with Jesus when he sees the people in the crowd and he says he sees people harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. But we often, I think, probably go either saint or sinner. One way that I think we can do this better is, I think, seeking to put yourself in their shoes. So I think learning about their struggles, their health issues. One of the great things about the counselee I was talking about earlier that had chronic pain is she shared with me kind of all what she was experiencing. And I went and started researching like all of her ailments. And one of the other things too that she wrestled with was they didn't have a firm diagnosis either. So even just putting myself in her shoes of, okay, I don't even have control of how to manage things. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to put myself in their shoes, both in terms of the uncertainty, but also in understanding the different struggles and pain points, different ways that they're experiencing pain. So I think that's one way to put yourself in their shoes. I think another is just to be mindful as you talk with them, right? I think some people, you hear the term politically correct and you're like, oh, PC police, don't do that. I don't think that's being politically correct to be mindful. I think we're compassionate. Like we think about how people are. Even just thinking about, we're welcoming a new staff onto our team who suffers from celiac disease, which means they have to eat gluten free. Otherwise their whole body just rejects the food and they get sick. And so Heather and I, instead of just being like, hey, we're going to make our food and you're on your own, I think one thing that my wife, Heather and I were going to try to do is we're going to try to commit to making most meals gluten-free so that we actually live in her reality rather than kind of making her dance around our freedoms that could potentially hurt her. So I think those are some ways as put yourself in their shoes, empathize, actually live in their world.
I think that's so interesting, Zach. And I like this, the sufferer category. And I think it's important to note it's different than saying something, you know, perhaps victim, because sometimes I think why we hesitate to put this third category is because we're like, well, we're all sinners. Like we, you know, there's like sin in our life. And if we talk about suffering, does that mean we're minimizing that, you know, they're still a sinner and they need to be redeemed by Christ? And of course that's true. And so we're not saying, oh, there's some people that are just victims of everything, you know, thrown at them. And no, of course we're all sinners. And but sufferer, I like this category because I think it really captures, sure, we're all sinners. Sometimes our suffering is because we did something sinful. But then a lot of times our suffering is also because the world is broken. Like I think of the young blind man when the disciples ask Jesus, who sinned, this man or his father, that he was born blind? And Jesus says, No. Like it wasn't this man's fault he was born blind, but this man was born blind so that the power of God could be shown in him, and then he heals him. And so I think that is really helpful. Like, yes, ultimately that man, you know, his greatest need is still his sin, but he's really suffering, and that blindness wasn't his fault, and the Lord has compassion on him. So I like this sufferer category because I think it also really captures all the nuances of there's different reasons why you might be suffering. Sometimes maybe it's sin, but a lot of times it's just the world is is broken, you know, which abstractly is because of sin. But there's sometimes things that happen that are just hard and broken. And yeah, so I think that's an interesting category.
Yeah. And I think to that thought, Sarah, what we don't realize is we often can address sin much more effectively in people's lives when we actually take care of their suffering.
Hmm. What do you mean?
Yeah. So if we actually build trust with people and walk with people in their suffering, they're like, people are more willing to give you more voice into their lives.
Hmm.
And so even with the person I counseled, we talked a lot about the physical body issues, but that led to some really rich conversations of what it looked like to trust the Lord in this season and what it looked like to repent of sin and to repent of broken, like of idolatrous dreams and other desires. And it took time, and it takes caring for the things that they care about and the hurts that they've walked through. And so I think to your point, I think we often fear, well, are we overplaying the sufferer card or the victim card and never acknowledging sin? And I would argue, certainly we can do that, but I would argue that we miss a beautiful opportunity to really walk alongside people and over time help people see the ways that Jesus is better than sin. Hmm. When we actually walk with people in their suffering.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And if you in that situation were to have tried to address the spiritual aspects before listening to all the physical stuff that was going on, I'm guessing like the kind of response you would have gotten would have been, you know, completely different. This person probably would have been pretty turned off to the whole conversation because it felt like this guy doesn't get me at all. And so, yeah, as we care for the whole person, people see that and understand that, and they feel wholly understood by us and feel can feel the care that we desire to transmit to them.
Yeah. And I think one other thing, especially for 18 to 22 year olds, if you're a student listening to this, or even maybe if you're even an adult, seeing students react, particularly when their bodies break down, I think sometimes we have this question of like, why are they overreacting? Like, this seems like a very extreme reaction. And I think something we have to understand, particularly for young people, is they don't expect their bodies to break down.
Hmm.
So we expect older people's bodies to break down because, well, that's what we have experienced. But when an 18 to 22-year-old all of a sudden can only eat half the things that they used to, or they're suffering pain and can't play the sports that they've always played, like that's a complete change in their lives. It impacts a lot of roots of where they've put their identity. It disrupts their way of life. It disrupts their sense of normalcy. And I think we would do well to just ask a lot more questions and to be a lot more patient.
Yeah.
Like I often, my timetable for someone's suffering is often much shorter than that person's actual timetable to suffer.
Hmm.
Sure. Yeah. And I think too, Caleb said something earlier, which I think is important, you know, for those of us who are not professional trained counselors, we should not try to be professional trained counselors. But I think even as a friend, you know, if you're a student who's just like discipling a younger student or getting together with friends and you notice that things are off, you know, even just being the one who suggests, hey, like, do you want to go to health services? Like, do you want me to walk with you? Like, do we need to check that out? Like helping our friends get to some of that help. Because yeah, I've had situations in discipleship. I've changed some of my questions that I ask now, because in the past, if a student would come to me and say, you know, I'm feeling really down, like all the time. Like I'm just not motivated to do stuff. And I would often start asking the heart related questions first and trying to figure out like, well, what's going on in their heart? Like what is going on? Now I actually ask different questions because often I would find out, you know, especially if they say, well, there's not really anything wrong, I'm just down. Well, then I find out later they haven't slept in a week because they've either stayed up really late or, you know, they've been working on homework. So they haven't slept. They've been skipping a bunch of meals and the meals they have been eating are like not super nutritious and they've just been like sitting in their room and going to class. So I'm like, well, okay. Like now we know like that is a lot, like that's a lot going on. And then we need to, you know, deal, like I need you to sleep. I want you to eat some good food. I want you to do something restful and see where they're at a week later. And so I think I've kept people not feeling great longer because I just like forget about the body and forget to say, you know, do you have a physical? Have you seen a doctor? Like, do we need to go over to the health services? So I think that is huge and like very simple and we don't think about it.
Yeah, I think one of the most spiritual, loving questions we can ask someone, whether it's they're mentally struggling or physically struggling, is have you seen a doctor?
Yeah. We've been talking for a while about how we can care for other people. I'd love for us to kind of turn the camera, if you will, back onto ourselves and for our listeners. So like individually, as we think about this idea of the body and the soul, how can we start to apply some of these things in our present time? What are some practicals for us? And also, what are some practicals to consider specifically as school is starting and COVID's still going on and everything that's happening?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of things. One is that we are called to steward our bodies, just like we're called to steward any other part of our lives. Our bodies are tools that God has given us. It is the tool that he has embodied our souls with. And so it's important. So I think a key question even to ask is what keeps you from stewarding your body? What are the things that keep you from stewarding your body well? I think probably for many, especially if you're coming back to campus and you're actually able to interact with one another, it's probably FOMO, like fear of missing out. Like we've missed out for 6 months, right, in quarantine. So I'm going to stay up late with a friend talking till 3 a.m. like every night, or maybe do other things that aren't as spiritual as talking with a friend till 3 a.m. Those things, it's okay to do it once in a while, but understand like your sleep cycle, it matters. And like actually putting yourself in a position to sleep well is really going to do you well week 8, week 9, week 11 of the semester, both in your academics and also in your ministries on campus. I think the same is true with food and with eating, right? Just because you're 18 to 22, and you can get away with eating wings every night, you probably shouldn't.
Oh, come on, Zach.
I say that, and that pains me because the Lord knows, and I'm pretty sure you guys know too, if I could eat anything every day, it would be wings. But that will affect you short-term and long-term. It will affect your sleep. It will affect your health. And so just understand your body, especially as it starts to get older, it will not rebound as well. And even if it can, you probably shouldn't force it to do that. Like think about now, how can I steward my body with what I put in my body? Now, I want to caveat this. Psalm 34 says to taste and see that the Lord is good. I think one of the ways to enjoy God well is to eat something you really enjoy. So do not hear me saying no wings ever. I'm saying whatever the food is, enjoy it, but also understand that you're called to steward your body. So I think that's one thing. I think another is just don't be afraid to ask for help. don't be afraid to be needy. I mentioned earlier that one student I encouraged to take a semester off. And one of the reasons why was stress and anxiety was so high that it was actually causing neurological pain. And so she was struggling with that. She'd go to the ER. And then, of course, work continued to pile up, and her group or her work group would be more frustrated with her because they were behind. And so then she'd feel more stressed and more anxiety, and then she'd feel more pain. And so I told her to do the one thing that probably feels like academic suicide, which is you should take the semester off. And she did, and she is a completely different person. But in that, she had to wrestle with the reality that her plan and the Lord's plans were different. And I think we have to understand the Lord's plan is not disrupted because your body is physically unable to function. And so if you need to stop something, like take it off the table. That even includes for those of us who are involved in like leadership teams on our campus fellowships or worship teams or like good godly things. If you need to take time off, that is okay. Like it is okay to ask for help, to take some space. Like you're not being ungodly by saying I need a little time to actually de-stress and actually reevaluate my priorities.
I also think that, and you, we were talking about this earlier before we started recording, the combination of move the body and care for the soul at the same time. One thing that's been just so vital to me is, you know, the people that I would normally spend time with, you know, for my own encouragement in the faith, we've been going for outside distanced walks together. And that's been amazing because we're moving, you know, these are the people that are discipling me. So they're encouraging me in my faith. You know, we're getting some sunshine. Like it's just all around good stuff. And even, you know, if I can't meet in person, even sometimes with students, I've done phone calls and I just walk around my neighborhood while I'm on the phone. And it feels like, you know, you're just walking with a friend and it's not quite the same, but, because yeah, whether you're in class in person or in class all virtual, like sitting on Zoom for a long time is hard. Sitting in class all day with a lot of extra just sort of COVID restrictions where you have to think about things more, like, is hard. And so as much as you can move the body, encourage the soul, and see people but in a safe way, because yeah, we don't want to make other people sick. We can't go against regulations. You know, that's not living by faith and submitting to authorities as the Lord has asked us to do. So we need to be within those regulations. And yet, being in person, being physical is important. You know, there's a reason why isolation has taken such a toll on so many. And so finding ways to move the body, care for the soul, be with each other in safe ways is really important.
Yeah, and I think just to piggyback off that, I think in this season of COVID, we've understood the real necessity of being together. And so even if you're masked, which at the campuses that I serve at, we have to be masked even outside. But you get so much from people just being physically with them, more so than even if you see their whole face on Zoom. So we were just talking about this, me and a couple other students, that if you look at someone's eyes, you can tell if they're happy or sad. If you, the way that you hear their tone, and it's so many recruiters tell you, if you're working the phones, people can tell that you're smiling by how you sound. Well, you pick that up even more effectively when you're with people. We were designed to be around people. And yet we have this odd restriction that being with people could actually be dangerous to one another. And so I think the application even in this season is by faith, how do we be together and meet together while also really seeking to serve one another and serve one another in a healthy way? And I think we can do that. And I think we just need to be creative. It's by faith.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really resonating with a lot of the things that we're talking about right now. And yeah, we want to steward our bodies, you know, by not getting COVID either. So yeah, as healthy as we can be in those interactions, the better. But yeah, I've definitely found that even as things have opened up a little bit, yeah, having those socially distanced times, I've even found that just not being on Zoom and not having like a firm end time to a thing has just been super refreshing for me. I feel like every time I'm on Zoom, everyone's like itching to like get off of Zoom. And so I just hung out with a friend distance the other day. We were working on something, just brainstorming an idea, and just not having like an end time and just being able to like think through it and just hang out and not feel like we both wanted to be off of Zoom was super refreshing. I was like, I haven't had this in like 6 months. This is so nice. So we definitely encourage you guys that are listening, as safely as you can, you know, do try to seek out opportunities where you can at least see one other person or something, go on a walk with them. And as you consider for yourself, like this idea of having like a holistic approach to life, yeah, like asking the question, like, are you willing to submit to the Lordship of Christ in how you treat your body? I think that's something that I, even over the past year, have really wrestled with. And even just feeling like other people will ridicule me. If I was for a long time known as the guy that would like kind of eat wings every night and eat pizza for lunch and never sleep and all these things. And I've kind of feared if I start doing those things, everyone's going to be like, Caleb, like, who are you? Like, what did you do with Caleb? But Jesus and stewarding our bodies well and having a holistic approach to health, both spiritually and physically, is so much more worth it than a couple, you know, jabs from your friends. So yeah, I do want to encourage everyone in that.
Well, because even, I mean, there's multiple times in scripture where it says your body is not your own. Like, you were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body.
Amen.
Yeah, I think you're moving us there, Caleb. But I think one of the main things that we have to remember even in this is that even as we steward our bodies, and I think even Sarah, you were bringing this out, but we are not our own. We were bought at a price. So I think a lot of people listening might wonder, okay, so here's all this practical stuff. How does the gospel apply? And I think the gospel applies in Colossians 3. And so I talked about the kind of the heresy of asceticism and Gnosticism. I love how Paul, how he, the antidote for it is this, 3:1. So if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. So you might think, that sounds very spiritual. But I think the reality is how we think about life holistically is wrapped up in the person of Jesus. That we, as we seek Christ, as we seek the things above, I think very, very naturally or supernaturally, as the Spirit works in us, we really do begin to reset both body and soul. And I think it points us to the scriptures, Psalm 34, taste and see that the Lord is good. I think when our bodies are failing us, Psalm 16, I think, is very helpful. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. And that's both spiritual and bodily in nature. And so I think we need to apply this. And then I think the other thing with it is, as we submit our body and soul to Christ, as we seek him first, James 1:5 says to ask for wisdom from God. If you don't know, ask God. And so I think that applies too for the care for your body and how to care for others. So I think that those are two very key things for us as we consider the care for the body and how the gospel applies.
Yeah. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening to this episode. Thanks for Zach for joining us. It's been really encouraging to talk about these things. And we hope for you listening at home that this has been helpful and challenging and applicable for you in your season where you are right now. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Disciple Makers podcast. We hope that you are challenged and equipped through this episode to have a more holistic view of the body and soul. and that through that view, you would be a more healthy and effective disciple maker as you seek to minister to others. As always, we have resources in the show notes for further learning on this topic, as well as a link to ways that you can connect us with students you may know that are starting at a Disciple Makers campus this fall. Like I mentioned earlier, we'll be having one more episode for this season of the podcast next week. So thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll join us then on the Disciple Makers podcast.